Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello and welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome and thank you for your support, dear sweet patrons.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much indeed.
It's like you've had your full English breakfast and you said, can I swap out the mushrooms for some beans? And can I also swap out the hash browns for some beans? And also the sausages for some beans? And also the bacon for some beans?
And also the plate for some beans?
And also a side portion of noodles.
Well, yes. But what I can guarantee is that during this section where we play extra bits that weren't in the episode, there won't be any more talk about actual noodles.
There'll be noodles.
There'll be noodles for you today.
Yeah, because we didn't talk about noodles at all.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you just said one thing was said, which Mike said that they're from Persia. But I can't remember.
Probably
were you making
true.
That up, or was that? Had you actually heard that?
I think I'd read that somewhere. But yeah. I think I've read that everything's from Persia.
Yeah, most things.
I think that might be one of my go-to facts. I'll just say that something's from Persia.
Yes, it's quite a safe one. No one's going to disagree with you.
No.
You know, it just feels. Another good one you can do for this kind of thing is mention the Peloponnesian War. No one's going to disagree with you. Yeah, they were actually used as a form of amphibious bridge during the Peloponnesian War. By the way, here's one thing I'll tell you about noodles. Is I think it slightly annoys me when spaghetti is sort of talked of as a subset of noodles.
Yeah. Mm. Americans sometimes call them noodles.
Yes, that feels like it's wrong. Spaghetti is all to do with Italian type stuff, and noodles is all to do with like East Asian food for me.
I agree. There's a third type of noodle.
Go on.
Oh yeah.
The pool noodle.
Ah yes, of course. Known to some as the sea snake or what have you. I think lots of people have different names for it.
Is this when you've got a tapeworm and tapeworm and you shit yourself in a swimming pool?
Thank goodness, no. No, it's a different kind of swimming aid.
What's a pool noodle?
Please do not use a large tapeworm to aid your child learning to swim.
And don't shit in a pool.
And also don't shit in a pool.
Tapeworm or no.
Yeah.
It's like a big... foam thing.
Yeah. Okay, yes. I'm vaguely aware of them.
Long cylinder foam.
Yeah,
I went to a really cool place in Berlin where it was like a pool and sauna and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but they also played like electronic dance music.
Classic Berlin.
And you went to this pool and then you'd get two pool noodles, put one under your knees and one under your head, and then just float in this pool. And there were lights and electronic dance music playing from under the water.
Nice.
And it was such a Berlin-y experience. It was really good. It's called something like the Aquadom.
Yeah.
But can I say, all that stuff is great, but if I had to live in Berlin permanently, I think after a while I'd be like, can I just please have something that isn't a techno version of it? Please, I just...
Willkommen to Techno Reimans.
Oh, we got A4 paper. A4 paper. I just want a pen. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but in this instance, I was very pleased to be having the Berlin version. Cool. It was really good.
I quite like to see people staying at a hotel getting bollocked by hotel staff.
I've never witnessed what you're describing, which is a full sort of reversal of the service-customer relationship to the point where you're basically being squared up to almost and said, I mean, that's amazing. I don't think I've ever seen that happen.
I loved it. I think it's partly they're empowered by being in a sort of in a seller's market, right? Because it's so busy and it's popular. I think this pair had just managed to piss off literally every member of staff in the entire venue in a 24-hour period. They've just clearly got a good boss, right?
I don't mean to make sweeping stereotypical statements about people from other countries.
I've got a feeling you're about to, though, with I don't know why. There's something in the air or something. It feels like it might be on the agenda.
Weird. Because you've said you're not going to.
That's weird, isn't it? And that's not what you do. And you're not that kind of person.
And you're not that kind of person. You wouldn't do that. And so this certainly wouldn't be the platform for that kind of thing to take place. And yet, oddly, I don't know what it is. I've just got this really counterintuitive, mad feeling that somehow that's going to, which makes no sense. So we'll probably have to cut this bit out. Sorry. Yeah. So go on. You're about to make a very specific, non-generalized, aren't you? Because you don't like...
With verifiable data to back it up.
With verifiable data, because you don't like to, and you don't certainly want things to sound that. So why would you send then...
It would make no sense for you to send it which did sound like that. Or which could be interpreted in that way, would it? Make no sense bearing when you produce the statement you've just made, would it?
Well, tell you what, I'm going to give you a fully factual statement and that's all. Okay. I have seen this very thing take place in the following countries.
Okay.
Poland.
Yep.
Hungary.
Okay. Are we talking about embarrassing Brits or resistance from hotel managers?
A hotel manager just bollocking
someone
who's staying at the hotel, but totally justifiably in a way that was completely correct.
Okay, so we've got Poland, Hungary. Interesting. I'm already beginning to see a pattern. Go on.
Albania.
Yes.
So I'm just saying that's all I've seen. But I'm pro.
Is it to do with having lived under the Soviet yoke in some way?
Well, that wouldn't...
That means you just can't... Listen, your patience with just bullshit is just like...
Well, that wouldn't include Slovenia.
And believe you me, Michael, I am very aware of that. Yes, exactly. Would include either one of the other ones.
Nor would it include Albania.
Albania, that one, I said. Exactly, either. So in a way, the exceptions in this case...
Or if we're being really, really pernickety, kind of not even Poland or Hungary
exactly,
either.
We could go as far as say Poland, couldn't we? Exactly, yeah.
No, so, to catch.
Exactly, which is why I said if, that's why I said if, wasn't it? If you lived under the Soviet Union, you might behave in a certain way. If you didn't, you might not. It's all certainly grist to my mill, anyway, on this topic point.
So Benjamin, what are you saying there?
I'm not saying anything.
There's a different service culture or a different, potentially.
I think there's a better service culture, which is that if you're being an arsehole, they will just tell you you're being an arsehole, rather than being obsequious and kind of...
The call-out culture.
Here's something I'll say. I think one of the things about going on holiday that I think... One of the things I like about going on holiday is you're paying for services, aren't you, on holiday. So you're ultra exposed to the service economy of the country you're visiting. And one of the things I like about holidays is just constantly comparing it to the service culture in the country you're from. You're more used to it. And just looking at microscopic differences. So I spend a lot of my time with people going, you see a British waiter would never have said that. Do you know what I mean? It's quite fascinating because you'd notice every point of difference.
He'd have just bowed to you slightly and then gone back into the kitchens and shat into your beef broth and then given it to you without a word.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas here in France, they're openly shitting into my beef broth.
That's what bourguignon means.
It's a turd-enriched broth.
And they say in France, the beef bourguignon should be indistinguishable on the way in and on the way out. So I was in France, and I was noticing microscopic differences in the French service culture compared to the British service culture. Mm-hmm. For example, in the French service culture, the service will always often be rude a lot. That's the kind of thing you notice, little microscopic. No, it's sometimes... One thing about the service culture in France is that it's quite specific, and everyone who's been on holiday in France will have experienced this. It's just if you go into a restaurant at 2:05, you're not getting any fucking food, mate.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's strict. It's like that there's a kind of rules-based, and it can be quite pedantic. So, for example, we went into a boulangerie at one point, and someone in our party couldn't really eat any of the food they had.
Yeah.
And they had lovely sandwiches. They had a lovely range of, it was a lovely boulangerie with a lovely range of French stuff. But the person couldn't eat any of it for whatever reason. And we just requested, could we just have, like, because this person is a child and it's quite good to have a lunch on a day when you're a child, especially. And this is stuff that Mike knows more about than me. But
you do have to feed your children. That is something that you have to do as a parent sometimes.
That's come up. Yeah.
So we asked for like, can we ask just some a bit of baguette with some butter on it, just literally because they can definitely eat that.
Yeah.
No. Now, I'm not saying it's better or worse.
And it was possible. But also, you would have been, this conversation would have happened in French, right? Because you know. It wouldn't have been like the irritating thing of someone barking at them in English or whatever.
No, it wasn't that. Yeah. And to translate, by the way, their answer was, no. I decided that it's about a... well, essentially, in France, the way French society is structured or somehow something.
They see a shellfish intolerance as a weakness that you should eat through, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And if dying is part of your journey to conquering your shellfish intolerance, then it's a step worth taking.
Yeah. Then just in those agony, in those sort of gut-wrenching, awful late teens and 20s, just produce some really good poetry or watercolours or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Contribute.
Yeah. And then perish at the age of 18.
Well, sorry, Henry, what was your theory? Are you going to invoke the French Revolution? And I hope the answer's yes.
The fact is they killed their aristocracy and they wish they hadn't. But it's about, essentially, the rules of the establishment are what are important, not what the customer is bringing. So essentially what matters is that we serve these baguettes, we close at this time. That is what the employees are focused on, is the workplace and the rights of the employees within it. That is the main focus. I'm not saying that's wrong at all, but it means that if you come in at 3 minutes past two, you might just get a straight no, there's nothing we can do. And also, if you ask for baguette with some butter on it, there isn't that leeway, whereas a different service culture, maybe in Britain or America, I don't know, might be more like, well, our main duty is to make this customer happy. And this is actually quite an easy way of doing it. Which is putting some butter on some, and I'm not judging it, putting some butter on some fucking bread, mate. But I'm not putting a judgment on it. It's just a different way of doing things. And actually, maybe putting some butter when you're a famous butter culture onto a baguette when you're a famous baguette culture with a knife when you're a culture that famously has cutlery isn't as easy as it feels like it might be for some reason.
You may as well have gone to a mechanic and asked for a pedicure for them.
Exactly.
This is not what they provide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want a bollocking?
Yes, please. Why not? Let's start the series off and put our feet square.
Now, this is a strange bollocking. So, because it's the first one back, I've not really read through the emails properly. And I've just picked this out. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit of a strange one. So it's from Andrew in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Doesn't talk about his exact proximity to Diamond Harbour, but I'm imagining not far. Mm-hmm. His bollocking goes like this. I don't know if this is a founded bollocking or not, but you can tell me.
Yeah.
Several times over the years, mention has been made of Acca Bilk, usually in a somewhat derisory tone.
By us
I think by us, but I don't think I've said the words Acca Bilk. Have you, Mike?
I don't know. I don't know who or what Acca Bilk is. According to Wikipedia, English clarinetist and vocalist.
So then Andrew writes, I'm aware that there are some reports of performances in his later years that may have been improved with the greater level of sobriety on Mr. Bilk's part, but I'd like to say a few words in his defence. And then he writes quite a long defence of Acca Bilk.
What? I think he protests too much about Acca Bilk.
I think he's complaining to the wrong podcast.
I think he might be.
Yeah. He's late of Somerset, it seems. I've never come across Acca Bilk. Ever.
It's a series of noises I've heard in that order before. I've heard Acca Bilk.
Yeah.
I've heard someone say Acca Bilk.
So what this leaves me with is it's like we've been bollocked, but it feels like maybe he's bollocking the wrong podcast, Mike, as you say. Yeah. Maybe we have mentioned Acca Bilk, but I just can't remember it. It's hard to know what to do with this.
It's a bit like if you bollock a tree in the forest and there's nobody there, has a bollocking taken place? I don't even know.
Would you like to hear his defence of Acca Bilk?
Well, maybe, yeah.
At the moment, I've got nothing against Acca Bilk.
Yeah, the bullet points, yeah.
Okay. But go for it.
In 1973, my father took my older brother and I to a concert given by Acca Bilk at the Opera House in Wellington. Mm-hmm. My older brother was learning the clarinet and I the violin, and we were both being schooled in the classical technique. Neither of us were familiar with the oeuvre of Mr. Bilk, although we had probably heard the international mega-hit Stranger on the Shore. The audience seemed to be comprised of a disproportionately large number of middle-aged women in furs, clutching copies of The Stranger on the Shore LP.
It isn't the return of Spurbs, is it?
Oh, yeah. This could be, couldn't it?
My father and my brother and I were clapping and stamping our feet, hollering and cheering, and generally having a wonderful time. I understand that comedy may sometimes require the mocking of deserving or even undeserving folk, but just know that for a few hours, some 50 years ago, Mr. Ackerbilk made a young boy in New Zealand very happy indeed. I mean, very hard to know what to do with this.
Well, can I say, I've gone from neutral on Ackerbilk to assuming he's probably a bit shit, based on that email, because...
Based on
because
email.
He entertains...
Well, no, because he's defending him again. What he's saying is lots of people slag off Ackerbilk, but I had a good time in Wellington 50 years ago. So I'm going to go with everyone else. Based on what I've got. I've got one incident from him, and he's telling me there's a general trend against Ackerbilk. Why would I go with this one guy? I'm going to go with the general trend.
Listen, I've got no memory of this. And also, I think I would... My memory is bad, but I feel like I would remember that. I've deployed a bit of AI.
Oh, yeah.
Because you get this sort of... the podcast transcripts that happen automatically and things.
Yeah.
Three Bean Salad is not coming up on any of these searches. The podcasts that are coming up, there's Paul or Nothing, which is all about Paul McCartney.
Right.
Livery Stable Blues, Alcatrizzle, Faux Shizzle, Springtime for Turnips, Portly Chess, and of course Wink's Rumpus Room, but not... not Three Bean Salad.
Portly Chess.
Yeah, so I think you need to redirect your email, Andrew. We'll return it to you in the post.
Yeah, I think bollocking voided.
Yeah, it's a weird one because it's I don't want to bollock.
It's
him.
Not our place to accept the bollocking because it's
Or could we put the bollocking on ice? And if we ever do talk about Ackerbilk in future,
yes, or unless Andrew's able to give us a specific reference point,
there's no way we've discussed Ackerbilk. None of us know who Ackerbilk is. Ackerbilk.
Let's put that bollock on ice.
Put it on ice. Andrew, you absolutely have a right of reply here. Let us know what's going on. Curious.
Most confusing.
Final email from Jackie from Seattle.
Lovely. Never been. Lovely.
Hi, Beans. The other day I was at my doctor's for my annual physical.
Yep.
The doctor and I were discussing healthy habits, and she asked me about exercise. I was trying to get across to her that I do some light to moderate exercise, including lifting weights a few times a week, but not in such a way that I'd really consider myself a weightlifter or someone who does intense exercise. My brain, however, was not able to come up with a way to explain this really uncomplicated idea to her, so instead I fumbled out, I do some exercise, but I'm not, like, on a beefcake journey or anything. Cheers, Jackie from Seattle.
Thanks, Jackie from Seattle.
I'm sorry.
I'm actually going to be doing a work in progress show in Edinburgh on Friday. So what I'd like to do is a little retrospective plug.
Right.
Because obviously by the time this comes out,
it'll be
2 weeks since the face of British comedy was changed.
Irrevocably. Across the broadsheets.
Forever. It wasn't just across the broadsheets, Mike. They started printing broadsheets again in order to put it across them.
Oh, those massive, like, old Daily Telegraph
ones. The massive old Daily Telegraph ones.
Yeah.
And they even went back to black and white photos and really, really tiny print. And loads of headlines and stuff and little stories on the front and stuff about World War One.
And, like, adverts for Johnston's beef fluid and stuff like that.
Adverts for Johnston's beef fluid and remedies for Johnston's beef fluid palsy. So I'm doing a retro plug. So please have had come to my show, thank you. And I hope you enjoyed it. I'd also like to apologise to the couple from Leeds on the front row, who I think there's a decent chance... I will have offended.
But you still keep calling them a couple. They weren't a couple.
They weren't a couple. That was why it was offensive. Yeah, and as for the 16 walkouts...
Put it in percentage terms, Henry. Let's be honest.
Well, not including me in the tech... it's a 97% walkout. Screw you. And also, it wasn't my fault that people thought that it was a Q&A session with...
Antonio Banderas.
Interviewed by Amal Rajan.
That's how you build it. That's how you get the thumbs on seats. It's just marketing. It's tough out there with the fringe. You've got to do what you've got to do.
You've got to make a splash. You make sense of the splash after the splash has happened. But make the splash first. Tough, tough old game.
So you put your head above the parapet, didn't you?
I put my head above the parapet, yeah. And it didn't get it didn't get shot off. It just didn't get any attention.
Just got largely ignored.
Just largely ignored.
Yeah. What venue are you doing, Henry? Or have you done?
I did The Box. An assembly room box, which I once did a full show in, I think.
I think they've made up The Box. I don't think that exists.
No, they haven't made up The Box. I've done lots of Edinburgh Festival shows, and almost all of them have been in places that were things like The Box, The Unit, The Trough. They all have names like that.
The Meat Safe.
Yeah. The Slough Tray.
The Exposed Area Behind a Debenhams. Yeah. The Medical Waste Area.
Australia.
Oh, mate.
Mm-hmm. I thought, so the next one is extra bits from our recording we did about Australia. Mm. I thought we were quite restrained in our use of our dog shit Australian accents. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, mate. And I also think, I thought it was actually quite an interesting fresh take on Australia that we went with, because we decided to focus on a lot of the time of our chair on the soap opera Neighbours, which I'm not sure if anyone's ever noticed before. That Australia is the birthplace of the sitcom, soap opera Neighbours.
Tell you what we didn't mention, mate.
Oh, yeah, mate.
Home and Away.
Oh, you're blimmin' right, mate. I never watched that one. Similar, apparently, was it? Did you do both? Yeah, some people did both.
It was more surfy, and it was basically the same thing, but you would occasionally see a beach and some sea.
Well, that's it. There was something funny about the fact that the one that Britain really took to was the one that was just set in a suburb. That
could very easily have been filmed in Wolverhampton. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't really want escapism. We want sameism, but with different accentism.
Yeah. Yes. Because I think Home and Away is bigger in Australia than Neighbours ever was.
Oh, really?
Because it's a bit more romantic, as you say, Mike. It's like living by the beach, it's surfing. Yeah. It's like, that's quite exciting if you're living in the suburbs of Melbourne, whereas for some reason we just liked that.
Yeah. Were people away in it, or were they mainly home?
Good point. Mm. I don't know why it was called Home and Away.
I think it made it a lot easier to make an episode when people were home. Yes.
Was it originally about football hooliganism, which is why it's called Home and Away?
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, these things change, don't they? They evolve. They think a life of their own, and eventually it became about sort of teenagers in a beach cafe drinking orange juice with the togs on.
Yeah. But initially it was about the Millwall Bother Squad. And it just evolves. Yeah, that's what can happen.
Because, you know, it's just notes from the execs, isn't it?
Notes from the execs come in.
Before you know it.
Yeah. Can we replace the face crusher character, Ian the Bastard? Yeah. Can we just a little tweak? Mm-hmm. Can we make him a teenaged Australian girl? Mm-hmm.
Can Screwhead become a surfing instructor?
Called Sean.
So we mainly talked about Neighbours, but I think in this extra bits, it's probably the non-Neighbours stuff.
Actually, you know what? I've got one little thought I had about Australia, which is I've not been to Australia. Mm-hmm. Mike has. Ben, you haven't, is that right?
I've never been. A friend of mine now lives in Australia.
Okay.
Is back in Wales this week, so I went to see her. And she told me that in Australia, they will, with a straight face, describe a room in their house that's kind of like a playroom for their kids, which a lot of them will have, as the rumpus room.
Let's get ready to rumble.
It's never not slightly amusing, I think, to someone not from Australia.
Mm.
But they don't see why it's funny.
Is that because it's like one of those, like, I think Americans have a few things like that. Is it because places that were initially colonised by Britain a long time ago have some weirdly historic phrases and things that just have been frozen and haven't moved on? It just feels really old-fashioned, doesn't it, rumpus room?
Yeah.
Yeah, so one thing I've noticed about Australians is, or Australia, this is a bit of a weird take, but I've not been to Australia,
But sometimes you'll meet an Australian or someone that's been to Australia, and they'll start talking. They'll say things like, "Yeah, but of course, at the time I just moved to Melbourne, so yeah, it was obviously different vibe from Adelaide." I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've not been to Australia. I don't know. I don't know what it's like in Adelaide or Melbourne. I don't, what are you on about? I don't know. I'm not being to Australia. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And then, of course, it was the whole New South Wales thing because, you know, obviously, I've not been to Australia. I don't know what New South Wales is like. Yeah, of course, his brother-in-law is from Cairns. So, you know what I mean? And I don't know what you mean. I've not been to Australia. I don't know.
Do you think Australian people assume too much knowledge on the part of people not from Australia?
Maybe.
Is this just one person you've met?
It's Jason Donovan, who I've been sharing a flat with for the past 2 years. Okay, he's out. He does a lot of musicals in London. He needs somewhere to stay.
He's got a very parochial take on the way.
Incredibly parochial take on Australia. Yeah.
And the character of its different cities.
So I think, I can't really remember, but I think shoes would have been sort of Converse, those kind of shoes.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I think is acceptable if you're 18, mm-hmm. less so if you're 45. Seeing a lot of that at the moment.
Yep.
It's quite a David Cameron move.
What is wearing Converse too late in life?
Especially on men. Men in their 40s in Converse, I find, I can't even put my finger on what's wrong with it. But
It's on the crisis spectrum. Is what it is. It's a cry for help, and it's a step before like a car they can't afford. An affair, you know, getting into kite surfing dangerously late in life, whatever it is, it's that stuff, you know.
Because I've got a couple of pairs in my shoe cupboard.
Mm. You're running.
And I feel
out of time.
Like I'm now 39. I think I'm in my last year of.
It may be time to give them the official Viking funeral. Yeah. That's what shoe boxes are for, by the way. That's where you're supposed to keep them. When the age comes, you put them back in the box, you set fire to it.
That's why they come with dry kindling.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what the crinkly paper is. Yeah. But you know the person in their 40s who wears Converse, who's the sort of the flag bearer for that?
I think it's Doctor Who, is it?
Yeah, with David Tennant.
David Tennant, yeah.
You know, nothing against David Tennant, but he to me is the definitive person in their 40s. He's always wearing Converse.
Yeah. Do you mean IRL or do you mean as when he played Doctor Who?
I just in general, I mean, I could just picture him on a poster doing Hamlet and he's sat on the throne in a sort of cool way and he's wearing Converse and he's got a crown on. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, it's a fresh take.
Yeah, it's a fresh take.
Yeah.
But it's still the same stultifying play. No, you can't
That's a big
say
move,
that.
Henry.
You can't say that. No, it's great. It's great. And I've always genuinely enjoyed every second of it when I've seen it in various versions. And especially because it's got a play within a play.
Within a play, within a play, within a play, within a play.
I don't know which play I'm in. Am I in the play or the play within the play? Are there Maltesers in the play within the play? There's a separate Malteser. Is there a separate smaller Malteser concession to get played from the play? All that sort of stuff, isn't it?
Is there a play within a play in Hamlet? Have I ever seen Hamlet? Maybe I haven't.
You have to pretend that you have, even if you haven't.
Yeah, I don't know if I have.
Yeah, there's a play within a play because the guy goes on and goes... time for the play within the play. And then everyone in the crowd goes, is there an interval within the play? Can there be an interval? If there's an interval within the play, does that mean just the people on the play within the play have an interval? Or do we have an interval watching the play within the play?
Really do with a whiz and stuff.
Well, there's an interval within the interval, isn't there?
You have to go back in and watch the play for a bit. You have to have a break from the interval. No, because in the play within the play, because they're doing the play to the people in the play. So if the play within the play has an interval, that means the people in the play who are watching the play within the play get to have a break, but we have to keep watching them.
Having a break.
Having a break. It's very, very confusing.
And queuing for their Maltesers.
And because in Hamlet, they do a... He's trying to catch out whether his father-in-law killed his dad or something. No, his stepfather or whatever. His dad's died.
Right.
His mum's married a new guy. He's trying to work out whether they murdered his dad by setting up a play where that basically happens to see if they watch it and go, I did that. Oh, God, I did that. Because that's what famously happens if you show someone. That's why in so many murder trials.
They do a little play, don't they?
They'll do a little play within a trial.
Bear
Baron's Court itself was basically, in my head, there's your flat, which in which you no longer live.
There's artists' flats.
There's the artists' flats.
There's the artists' flats, which you drive past when you go into
which
London,
are,
and they're beautiful.
But they're like some of the most beautiful properties in London, which a lot of people would have driven past on the way in and out of London.
Yeah.
Because it's, is it the West Way?
Or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's one of that. those big kind of artery roads that feeds the West. Mm-hmm. There comes a point where you drive past these, they're beautiful, stunning. I don't know if they're Victorian, like red brick houses, which have these incredibly beautiful arched glass windows. And they were designed for painters.
Yeah.
But I think they'd be the ultimate, like, right, my name's Sir Terence Wiblington. I have royal patronage. And I've now finally got one of these incredible artist flats.
There are no more excuses.
Oh, shit.
It turns out it is just me. I can't do noses. I'm sorry.
I can't do noses.
I thought it was because I had a gloomy flat. I just can't do noses.
The problem is you, Sir Terence. And it always has been. And to be honest, it's in the Wiblington gene pool. No Wiblington has ever drawn a decent nose for centuries.
That's why I always paint my portraits in a full suit of armour. But they're never happy with it.
Yeah, I feel there'd be a lot of pressure once you move in front of those to come up with some good paintings. Mm. And not helped by the fact that they then built a massive motorway next to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're now kind of gross place to live.
They're a weird combination. They're like the nicest houses you've ever seen, but in front of the noisiest, most horrible road.
Yeah, and covered in sort of 3 inches of sort of road grime.
Yeah, there's a lot of thick road grime. Yeah, it's a weird place to live. There's Queen's Tennis Club.
Is that in Baron's Court?
There's the lovely artist houses. There's Queen's Tennis Club. Mm-hmm. It's like these weird badges you wear as a Baron's Court. If you live in Baron's Court, you say to people, I live in Baron's Court. In London, people say, where do you live? Generally, the answer is Woodford Green, Green Church Hill.
Yeah, Streatham.
Streatham. But just a series of places that no one's heard of, because there are so many places in London that no one's heard of. Woodford Marsh, mm-hmm. Green Marsh Hill, Wood.
Section 17.
Ben, stop dropping in references to your band. It's not going to take off. It's too late, Ben.
It's too late for Rock Bossa Nova.
It's too late for Rock Bossa Nova.
Our debut album is called Roadblock, and it's out on BP Records.
And it's the same as the... you've based the front cover, haven't you, on the Red Hot Chili Peppers one, but you're all walking along, and instead of having socks around your dicks, you've all got Converse trainers around your dicks, haven't you? You've lent into middle age in a way and gone, actually, you know what? I'm going to change the paradigm.
Yeah, but that is better than their first suggestion, which was that they wore socks on everything apart from their dicks, which I'm pleased to say the suits did veto.
They did veto, and sometimes you need the corporate world to step in.
I mean, not to give too much away about my own anatomy, but there's no way I'm keeping a Converse trainer on my penis.
But that's why you've invested so heavily in self-adhesive knob paste. Isn't it? Is it not working? Is it not working, the knob paste?
I told you it worked because you bought it for me as a gift.
I know. And I got it sent on Amazon to you. I even did the thing where they said send a little message, and I said, hope the knob paste works. Happy birthday.
It's really personal.
But I noticed that the same website was also selling chicken pate. Was it just chicken pate?
I think it was when the chicken pate goes off in the warehouse, they relabel it.
Yeah. It's briefly quite sticky.
So, no, the few things that... So, when you live in Baron's Court... Because in London, people say to you, where do you live? And when you say you live in Baron's Court, people always... Because there are certain stock responses you get. There are some places... And, you know, there are some places where you live and people go, oh. And some places you live, people go, oh. But people judge you. There's a lot of inter-London judgment about this kind of thing. What you get for Baron's Court is people go, and then sometimes they go, That's the best you can hope for.
Yeah.
What you have to do is you have to hit them with some facts. So what you do is you go, actually, it's the home of Queen's Tennis Club. Mm-hmm. Another one you do is you say, it's got those artist flats.
Mm-hmm. Lambda?
What's that? It's got Lambda. Sorry, you're right.
One of your flatmates taught for many years.
That's right. Yeah. It's got Lambda. It's got the drama school Lambda.
It's got a huge Tesco.
It's got
maybe London's biggest Tesco.
It's got London's biggest Tesco. I would say it's got. I would say it's got a Tesco that's bigger than Liverpool. I'm going to make a guess. I think London's biggest Tesco will be bigger than the second biggest city in the UK.
You can get a ferry to the Isle of Man from. That's how big.
that's how big it is. And also that does great for your Tesco extra club points, doesn't it? If you take the ferry.
Yeah.
The other thing that's got that's quite interesting is what it doesn't have, which is an apostrophe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's boring.
Yeah. You're going to have to do some really sexy content to make up for this. It's also got some steamy nightlife.
It doesn't. Mike?
Yeah.
So Henry says when you tell someone you're from Barons Court, they just go like, what's that?
Yeah.
What I'm interested, what do people say? If you talk to someone and you say, I live in Exeter,
yeah.
What's the thing they always say? Because I've got one that people always say to me when I say I'm from Cardiff.
It depends where they're from in the first place.
Okay. So let's imagine they're not from Exeter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. So, I mean, if most Londoners will say, where's that? Right?
Yeah.
Right.
There'll be Cornish people who will feel nostalgic for some great shopping days out they had in Exeter.
Okay.
And by the way, just for everyone, the great is in inverted commas.
Yes, very much so. But we'll still view it as suspicion because it's outside of Cornwall, of course.
Can I say one thing that I would say, Mike, and you must get this a lot still, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Is, does it still have that Athena?
Yes.
Because wasn't it the last place in Britain to have an Athena?
I think it was, yes.
Which
yes,
is the poster shop, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
There are people who are from Devon, though, or who've passed through Exeter, are very fond of Exeter, I find. Like, if they went to university or college here or whatever, there's something about if you're at a certain time of life in your teenage years or your young adulthood that they're very fond of it. But I think unless you're in that category, it's a complete non-entity and they have no associations with it at all.
That's interesting
because it doesn't have a massive football team that's famous across the world or like it's got a very good rugby team. But I mean, not many people are into rugby. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't. There's no sort of thing. It doesn't have a giant causeway.
No,
you know, it's just quite a nice sort of comfortable place to live.
It's not even clear how to make fun of it exactly.
Well, this is it. What's the way in?
The way in?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
full of twats.
Full of you can fall back on that normally, can't you?
Yeah, but I think we've got a sort of fairly normal twat ratio. Do you know what I mean? We haven't disgraced ourselves in the news in a long time. There's no.
You did have a terror attack.
Yes, yeah.
Carried out by or on?
Just a man who turned out to be just quite ill, just snuck into the toilets of Giraffe and blew his own pubes off, basically. So he it didn't go well.
It is a confusing menu, to be fair, isn't it? Because it's like, hang on, is this a sushi place? Is this like a Middle Eastern place? I can get fish and chips, but I can also get chicken chow mein. What the hell's going on here? Darling, I'm going to the toilet. Have you got any lighter fluid? I'm going to have to...
fertilizer.
Yeah. I'm going to have to singe off the curlies.
So mercifully, it was a failed...
Yeah.
It was a failed attack.
Yeah.
I often wish it had more of a sense of like of itself of an identity. I do feel quite jealous when I go to other cities like Liverpool or Manchester or Glasgow. I do feel a bit jealous. They've got a real thing, a real flavour, or an Aberystwyth or whatever.
Necessarily put Aberystwyth in that group, but sure.
No, but people from Aberystwyth, they love Aberystwyth.
They're obsessed with Aberystwyth.
It's a beautiful place, and there's a lot of Welsh spoken there. And do you know what I mean? So there's a clear, like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've got a vibe.
Do you know what would help, Mike?
What?
If Exeter had a big band that had come from there.
Well, that's it, again.
Because, for example, I always think, like, Sheffield, they just think, oh, Pulper from there. And I kind of imagine everyone from Sheffield's kind of a bit like Jarvis Cocker, which isn't true.
So down the road, you could travel, like, half an hour down the road, you're in Tynmouth.
Yeah.
Which is a tiny town. We've got Muse, for crying out loud.
A Muse are from Tynmouth?
Yeah, they built a skate park. They keep investing in Tynmouth. Do you know what I mean? And everyone loves them in Tynmouth. But we don't have that.
One of the problems, you know, no offence, might be a lack of notable people from Exeter.
Katie Hopkins used to live in Exeter. What are you about?
Because I'm looking at the list of notable people from Exeter. We've got Admiral Horatio Nelson, not bad.
That's a pretty big hitter.
That's a big
hitter. That's true, is it?
I don't remember that.
First Viscount Nelson.
What, was born here or something? Didn't live here, surely.
He's got Freedom of the City.
Oh, come on, mate.
He's from Norfolk.
That's like getting an honorary doctorate. Do you know what I mean?
And also, Freedom of the City of Exeter is a bit like... That's like a £5 book token. That's not fucking joking. Okay. Okay, the good news is you've got freedom. You've got the freedom of something, Horatio. Oh, yes, yes. I knew all those military battles would be worth it.
Yeah.
You've got the freedom of the city. I like it. I haven't got the freedom of a town. I haven't got the freedom of a village. I've got the freedom of a city. It's going to be a big hitter, won't it?
Probably Venice.
It'll be your Liverpool, your London, Venice.
Pocahontas passed through Exeter briefly.
Exeter.
That is true.
But that's passed through. Everyone,
but that's
everywhere.
The thing. But the problem is that she passed through on her way to London, and it was just everything was fine. She just had a good night's sleep in a local inn, and it was fine. Yeah.
But the fact that you know that about Exeter means that they're scraping the barrel, for notable people in
basically
Exeter,
on the road from Plymouth to London. Yeah,
yeah. So I'm actually, I feel like Barons. No, it feels like Barons Court has currently got quite a lot more going for it than Exeter.
Whereas our active things, we had the Baedeker Blitz in the war, but then again, that's like, we didn't do that. We just got nobbled a bit.
What was that?
That was what, like the Baedeker guidebook, where they, with revenge for us bombing beautiful things in Germany, they bombed like just some towns that would kill the morale of the nation.
So not Exeter! No!
Exeter, no. Coventry, York.
But that was one of the most brilliant pieces of British counter-espionage of the war. They created fake Baedekers where they pretended that Exeter wasn't a dump. Those fell accidentally into the hands of a German general. And sure enough, they drew all that important fire away from the true centres of Britain. Croydon, Swansea. And of course, Derby. Yeah. Okay.
So it's not enough. I mean, this is the thing, like in a story you need drama. Like Exeter is just a place where I think just quite a lot of time everything is fine. There's a nice river in it, hasn't had too much trouble, it's not had enough pain to create extraordinary jazz clarinetists or poets, you know.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at some more. This is famous people from Exeter. Yeah. Chris Martin, not bad.
Yeah.
Matthew Good. Do you know him?
No.
He's an actor. Beth Gibbons.
Okay.
Yeah, she's cool.
Quite cool.
So, I mean, to sum up, because I feel like I'm dragging people into the mire here. There will be people listening who've got no idea where Exeter even physically is. Yeah. And even though we're talking about Exeter, won't quite be asked to look it up, even though they are listening on a device that could look that up. That's Exeter.
Yeah.
To the outside world. But to me, it's home.
Well, it feels like Exeter is the Baron's Court of Baron's Court, or of Britain, maybe. Maybe Exeter is the Baron's Court of Europe.
Yes, but it's a lot less sort of shit-strewn than Baron's Court, I would say. Yeah.
Why is it you can't get off your high horse about fecal matter being something that's strewn everywhere? Because you'll never get one in this city until you get over that.
What, I want to know what this Cardiff cliche is.
What do you get when people say to you, where are you from? They'll be drawn to you because they'll approach you, and initially they'll say...
Nice mutton chops.
Nice mutton chops.
Yeah.
And you are really pulling off that duffel coat. Mm-hmm. So then what comes next? Where are you from?
So whenever I say I'm from Cardiff, they always do the same thing. They always go, ooh, I've heard that's nice. We were thinking we'd come there for a weekend, actually. And I go, don't. Always have the same conversation.
Yeah. Okay, Ben, can I give you a little clue as to what I think I may be able to shed some light on this?
Okay.
So I'm a person who I think I'm quite good at being polite when I have to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, my mum really instilled it in me to write thank you notes.
You send us one at the end of every recording.
I send you at the end of every record. And it's just we don't have to give too many secrets away, but you each get a very, very, very small hamper, don't you? With
it's your latest pickles.
Of adhesive knob paste.
Adhesive knob paste. Some Spanish ham and a surprise chutney. And keeping those chutneys surprising over the years has been really, really, really difficult. But anyway, don't make a big thing of it. So one of the things that, for example, if I ask someone where they're from and they say somewhere that I don't know anything about, one of my things, I might say something along the lines of, I've heard it's nice.
Oh, Henry.
Oh, really?
I've heard that. Because you can't say to someone, I've no idea what that is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think I tend, in that situation, I'd quite often say, I've heard it's nice, and I'm planning a weekend break there at some point. Now, I maybe wouldn't go as far as to say that, but really? It could be that that's what's happening.
Interesting.
Cardiff had a thing, I think, had a thing where, certainly into the southern bit of England, like I was aware, because I went to Wales a lot as a child, I was aware that Wales, particularly South Wales, had a reputation as being sort of a rundown no man's land, largely from people who'd perhaps never been, but they'd seen a picture of Port Talbot or something like that, or heard about a miners' strike.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then Cardiff had a reputation as somewhere that had been regenerated in the sort of 90s and noughties and that kind of stuff. And that's why people from that bit of England will go, I've heard it's actually, with a stress on the actually.
Well, that's it, yeah.
You know, despite the fact it's in South Wales.
Well, the other thing I get
having
sometimes
never been to South Wales.
I tell them I live in Cardiff and then they tell me how much they enjoyed their holiday in Pembrokeshire, which is like a 2-hour drive away. Yeah. They may as well be saying, I really enjoyed, you know, Birmingham Calais. Symphony Orchestra. Yeah.
So what do you want them to say? I mean, what do any of us want anyone to say?
To be left alone.
I think that's what we're realising, isn't it? Can you just leave us alone? Do you know what I mean? I'd rather listen to a podcast, read a book, or just stare into a canal from a bench. Do you know what I mean? Because you ask someone, why do you ask someone where? I suppose you ask someone where they're from so that you can ID. It's a social lubricant, isn't it? It's just something to talk about, isn't it? Because ideally, you've been there, and you go, "Oh, I've been there." And then you talk about the fact that you've been there, right? But then who gets anything out of that, really? It's just finding out where someone's been.
Yeah. You can be genuinely interested.
Henry's going, place. What am I getting out of this? What's the value of this interaction?
Can I cut this supporting character? I think I want to know that about a person.
But also, it is, Henry, you're right. It's the go-to question, I think, basically, if you've never met someone. Mm. Because what else can you ask?
When you ask someone where they're from,
you ask, what are they thinking?
Yeah. How about this? Where are you going? I don't give a damn heck about your past. But I do care about your future, starting right now, because you've just entered a new country. It's called Pacador.
I just walk up to someone.
Give them one of your laced meat pies and lead them away.
I just walk up to someone and I go, just stop oil. What do you think?
Except when it comes to vinaigrettes, am I right? Because otherwise you're looking at just balsamic or just lemon juice on salad. It's a bit bitter.
It's a bit too tart. Yeah.
But it's the big hitter of small talk, I think. And it's a good one. Because nothing else works.
But, right? Yeah. Here's the thing. When you say to someone... So when you say to someone, where are you from? They then answer. There's a kind of a rhythm, a kind of conversational ping pong has started, right? A batting, a to and a fro, and a batting of the ball. The ball is chat. The ball is interaction.
Okay, I think of it more of as a dance because we're in it together, whereas you're looking to conquer with a smash pong ping pong hit. Yeah.
Well, it is actually like you're playing pong ping with me because I change the rules. It's like, I don't know if I'm ponging or pinging or coming and going. Is this a table or a chair or a chaise longue? I don't even know. Whereas, Mike, you're doing some obscene sort of like, you know, crotch thrusting dance. That's what you think conversation
I'm doing
is?
Doing a Somerset tango. Yeah.
You're doing a Somerset tango. I think it's a batting of a ball to and fro. Mm-hmm. So, where are you from? So, someone says, Ipswich. Where are you from? Ipswich. So the natural rhythm of that conversation is the next thing is supposed to be something nice about Ipswich. That's the rules. So the rules of conversation is, where are you from? Mm-hmm. Cardiff. Oh, I've heard it's really nice. Like, that's the rhythm is supposed to go, doodle-a-doo, dum, doodle-a-doo. That's the music of the conversation. Where are you from? Cardiff. Oh, I've heard it's really nice. Oh, I had a really nice time there. Blah, 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 isn't it? That's the kind of give and take. And then they say, where are you from? And then, so you both, so, but what can happen is you say to someone, where are you from? They say Derby. And then you're in all, you're in an absolute pickle.
Because the only thing you've got to say is that once somebody reversed a transit van over you in Derby.
That's all you've got on Derby. And you have to say it, but in the positive tone of voice. Oh, I got reversed over by a transit van in Derby. but you know what? That rule is maintained pretty much throughout the country, right? People, will, you'll say where you're from, people will try and say something positive, with one exception, which is London. London is the only place where there is absolutely no requirement at all to maintain that basic... It's a sort of social interaction. It's hello, how are you? Have a seat. But if you're from London, it's hello, how are you? Go fuck yourself is what you get.
Yeah,
because it's the only place where you can be a taxi driver or someone you're chatting to in a shop or whatever goes, where are you from? And I'll say London. And they'll go, oh, I hate London. Literally, anyone from London will have experienced it. And you don't get it for any other place. For someone to go, oh, I hate Derby. Oh, I really hate Cardiff. You will never have heard those words. It's so unbelievably rude.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the other thing you get specifically, you get, oh yeah, I went to London once. I hated it. I had a terrible time.
I avoided it at all costs.
Yeah, it's such a weird position to be in. But I always know if I do a little bit of digging in the conversation. Yeah. The reason is
you haven't been to Madame Tussauds.
You haven't been and seen wax version of the Beatles. That you don't get the city. It's always, but generally, if you do a little bit of digging, you'll find out they did try, they actually did live in London for a bit and they couldn't handle it.
Oh.
Because this city ain't taking no prisoners, my friend. If you ain't got what it takes, you got to be very, very, very special. Only a very certain, specific 7 to 8 million people can handle this town.
At a time.
At a time.
Is it something I've heard a lot is people saying, I'm sure they said this to you, they're like, oh, I like going to London, but I could never live there. That's the thing I hear quite
yes.
a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I can.
And what I say to them is, yeah, well, I can never live in Exeter, and I also don't like visiting it. So get the fuck out of my grill. Give me a pasty and shut the heck up.
Yes.
That'll be the kind of thing I'll
say. The driving is too frightening, of course.
What, in London?
Yeah. A lot of people are afraid of driving in London from outside of London.
Again, they just can't handle it.
even though it's probably easier driving in London than most places.
Yeah, because it's quite slow.
Traffic barely moves.
Well, that's how I passed my test, finally, fourth time. Yep. Drove out of the driving centre, got in a traffic jam, then drove back in. Basically, I turned right twice without crashing the car.
Time's up.
Unless I got my qualifications. No, it really is. I've had it so many times. Oh, yeah, I hate London. But what's weird is you end up getting if anyone's slacking off where you live, where you're from, you end up getting defensive about it, even though you don't really want to be. Well, it's that funny thing, isn't it? Is if I'm with other Londoners, I don't mind slagging off London and saying it's a complete dump, impossible to live in, noisy, everyone's rude, it stinks, it's insanely expensive, it's really, really stressful. Just thinking about it makes me want to sort of have a heart attack. Yeah. Oh God, no. I'm fine having that conversation with another Londoner.
But if someone from outside London criticises the most recent production of Evita, you are absolutely livid.
I will. It'll be a hot Pret Americano down the neck, I'm afraid, for that person.
Now, obviously, when we do this podcast, the way I like to think about it is, what we're doing is we're taking the lukewarm banter and then we're putting it into a blender.
Oh, hello.
Take it out straight into a bain-marie.
Okay, yeah, like it.
Then into a sous vide machine.
Ooh.
Then out of that into an egg poacher, into
yes,
a
indeed.
Rice cooker.
Yeah.
Out of that into a frying pan, into the toaster, into a toasty maker, then a Breville pie maker, out of the Breville pie maker, into the slushy machine.
The ones you get like in a local 7-Eleven?
Perhaps the salad leaf dryer.
Straight into the salad leaf dryer, mm-hmm. out of that into the air fryer, mm-hmm. out of the air fryer into the egg coddling mm-hmm. machine, oh, wow. mm. out of that into the meat grinder, straight through the meat grinder.
Battery operated cheese grater.
Into pass through the cheese grater.
And then just through a simple handheld garlic crusher.
Yeah, that's right.
And the salt cellar that can also be used as a hand torch as well.
Very useful, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got that from the middle aisle of Lidl. And with that torch, we shine a light on the important issues facing Britain today. And that's three beans salad.
Beautiful work, Ben. Well,
such as kitchen gadgets.
Oh. Here's some more stuff.
I remember hearing a horrible, terrible story about a dog who this is why you've got to be so careful with dogs and puppies especially, but I think dogs in general, they'd left a... Basically, they'll eat anything, is that right? Pretty much?
Within reason.
Within reason.
Well, they won't eat their way out of your car, for example.
No.
Yeah.
Which is why that's the safest place to put them, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why we have a high-end IO10 in the living room.
Yeah.
Ben sold it to us after he stopped using it as a toilet.
Yeah.
Shipped it down. Yeah.
And he promised you, he bleached every visible surface, didn't he?
Someone, this is a bit of a tangent. Somebody took a photo of my Hyundai i10 outside Cardiff Sherman Theatre.
Yeah.
A Bean listener took a photo of it and put it on Reddit saying, here's the i10.
Number plate included.
Number plate included, yeah. So that's why I think it was taken down by whoever moderates the Reddit. It's not us. But
the police?
No, I don't think it's the police. But someone put my then registration number into... They claimed that they'd put that my registration number into the internet and that I hadn't paid tax on my car.
What?
So seeing this, I went into a panic and then checked and I had paid tax. So I just want to clear up. My car is taxed.
Yeah.
My i10 is taxed.
Yeah. And whoever that is, I don't think you need to keep tabs on Benjamin's finances or tax. You can resist that urge, probably, I say. It's an incredibly strange thing to do.
Especially with the amount of good television there is now on the streamers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not... quality dramas.
Yeah, if you've got the internet access that you are able to get DVLA information from Benjamin Park.
We're in a great era of tennis. There's a new, you know, there's two great contenders in tennis at the moment.
Tail end of the Women's Rugby World Cup,
I think. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. Also, you can walk out of your home and close your eyes and walk for 20
minutes.
And
read a book.
And close your eyes and read a book. And just walk for 20 minutes reading a book with your eyes closed.
Are you telling them to close their eyes and walk into traffic, Henry? Is that what you're
saying? No, don't do that. And maybe get run over by a Hyundai i10, and that would actually be good a bit of justice for once.
Yeah. Let's not go i10. Secret police on BP, is all I'm asking.
There's more fun things out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really mind it. I was annoyed that they'd obviously put it in wrong or something. Because I have paid. I'm fastidious. It's on direct debit.
You were being libelled.
Yes,
Ben, can I say to something? You're on the verge of tipping over into the Izzy to protesting too much that he's paid his tax territory.
Oh no!
So I'll just stop saying you've paid your tax. I haven't paid my tax.
You don't have a car.
That's true. Appliances is like the life, national stereotypes massively apply to appliances and how people think about them. So, I mean, Germany has been cashing in on this hasn't it? Massively.
Yeah.
You just think Germany is going to be efficient and all that kind of stuff.
I've got a Bosch hob. Just want to get that out there.
You've got a Bosch hob?
Yeah, I've got a Bosch hob.
Yeah.
That says a lot about me and the way I want the world to see me, I think.
Yeah. And you can rest easy.
Is it gas?
Oh, it's gas, yeah. Yeah. Pumped directly from Germany.
But there is a trust, isn't there?
Yeah.
You do feel a trust. This goes for boilers as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Boiler makes is huge for this
stuff. Our ancient boiler has only recently died. We are in the process of, selling everyone and everything we own to get a new boiler. And we're going German all the livelong day.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you not?
Are you getting a Havertz? That's Kai Havertz. Havertz, the Arsenal striker, has launched a...
And he's got his own brand of boilers.
He's got his own brand of boilers. Everyone German's trying to get on in it now.
Yeah, Klinsmann's done it.
Klinsmann's done it.
Rudi Völler.
Angela Merkel's done it.
Yeah, yeah. And she's got, yeah, for her, it's boilers and electric gates, I think.
That's right, yeah.
And this is a boring conversation, Mike, but you must have had to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Heat pump.
Oh,
baby.
Oh,
here we go.
That's what we, that's, well, that is the hot topic at the moment.
Or the not quite hot enough topic, some people probably say.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's what we'd like to do. We're taking quite a deep dive into seeing actually what is the most eco sound here now. So we're in the process of doing our own research.
We're going to get a lot of emails.
Yeah,
we got an email off Bean Beanland, didn't we?
Yeah, no, was it Bean Beanland? That's right. Was he a real person? Yeah.
Bean Beanland is a man who I think is involved in the heat pump industry, potentially.
I think so.
Does a podcast about them with Evan Davis. So I think maybe you need to go and listen to that, Mike.
We're going deep. We want to be as green as possible. Is the idea?
Okay,
that's what we're hoping.
But the answer could still be gas boiler.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's just a series of pyres, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just going to burn our rubbish. But indoors now, rather than next door's garden.
Yeah, so my toaster's Morphy Richards, which is the British choice. Land of hope and glory,
and in those feet in ancient times,
make some toast on pastures green.
And was it equally toasted on both sides? No, it wasn't, but come on, guys, we're doing our best.
Sadly, that is true. It started to fail recently, so one side gets more toasted than the other. Yeah.
Yeah. As I've discussed before, my toaster, which is a Duelit, the industrial choice.
Yeah.
Or no, I think it claims to be sort of, some things claim to be catering level, whatever. You know, it's one of those ones.
Yeah.
I talked about before. It's an infinite toaster, so it doesn't stop toasting unless I intervene. So it just carries on. So I've sort of got used to it. I've built it into my lifestyle a bit to suddenly wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh God, is the toaster still on? So it toasts one side of the bread, but not the other. So one side can get completely burnt and the other is soft as a lamb's bottom.
That's very good for a bacon sandwich, though.
Oh, which side do you want in and which side do you want out?
Outside crispy. Inside. Nice and warm, melty butter, and you know all the rest of it.
Oh, that's nice.
Nice little texture.
What brand is your toaster, Mike?
I think it's very much like own brand. I don't think there is a brand on it.
What?
Well, like Tesco, like, you know, like some supermarkets will. Yeah, they'll send a. Yeah, it's a very basic creature. I don't know what brand it is. It's definitely not one of the. It's not popping out. It has a brand, but if it does have a brand, I cannot for the life of me think what it is.
I think the two big British ones are Morphy Richards, which is the one I've thrown my hat in with.
Yeah.
And then Russell Hobbs.
Oh.
And they must absolutely hate each other.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Are they even like across the waters from the same town?
Probably. It'll be two brothers that fell out in the '30s.
Yeah.
One of them was a fascist, one of them went to fight in Spain. for the international brigades. It'll be that kind of story.
Yeah.
It's one of the few kind of parts of the home where you can still buy nominally British things.
Of course, they're made in China
or whatever, but.
Yeah.
Yes, what else do we make apart from foldy bikes? Do we make the old car now and again? What do we
do? Loads of weapons, basically.
Make loads of weapons. Yeah. Quite good at that.
If BAE could make a sort of missile system that was sort of small enough to poach an egg with. That's an area they could step into, isn't it? My oven though, currently, which is, this is not a digi thing, actually. My oven's got this thing where, you know, like oven settings.
Mm.
They're just, why not? Can we universalize this, please?
Yeah.
Universalize oven language. It's like the bloody interrupting the bloody Rosetta Stone every time I want to make a frittata.
I can support that. I think for people who are moving into new houses where
it's all rubbed
the house is new, but the oven is old and there's nothing is labelled. There's no There's no signage even anymore.
So my oven, right, it's got the light bulb picture.
Yeah.
Which I think means light bulb.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a one-for-one meaning system.
Yeah.
Light bulb represents light bulb.
And you only actually ever use that if you want to use your oven as a light-up nativity during Christmas time.
Yeah. As a light-up meat nativity, which you then roast and eat.
If you're using it to read your Grishams, then you're officially in the bad reading habits zone.
Yeah.
So it needs to change.
Yeah. Then there's a two bars, which I think just means oven.
Yeah,
non-fan oven.
Non-fan
oven.
I don't know who's doing that when given the option of a fan.
Then it's got grill. Grill, which is the spikes, the mini triangles. Grill fan.
It typically doesn't work, I find.
doesn't work.
Yeah. Or if it does, it'll like fill your house with smoke somehow.
Yeah. And the hot, just hot bacon. There's a really, really ancient bacon, though. Like hundreds of years worth of bacon stink.
Someone had some really good bacon 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's pig on fire rather than pig cooked, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not, it's a. And then, okay, hang on.
Is he going to get his oven?
So,
it's sound effect free this time. Sound effect free for the oven, apparently.
Sorry, for the oven.
Really noiseless experience.
And then it's got a picture of a fish for one of them.
What?
The fuck is that? What a fan.
So you put a single fish in and
grill.
Get 5,000 out. Is that the idea? What's the chance your arm?
It's the.
I haven't seen fish sitting on that.
It's an indocit. Is that a
don't know.
But so I didn't. What does that mean?
I've got an indocit washing machine, I think.
Has that got the fish setting? I mean, washing machines obviously have the same problem.
Indocit is Italiano.
Okay. That's Italian. Is that a big fish? Is it a big fish?
I think washing machines. Although washing machines tend to be a bit less opaque, you can get a bit of a clue. There'll be an adjective or a verb or something. Do you know what I mean?
Somewhere.
Yeah. Occasionally a noun. Yeah. Not just a series of curious hieroglyphs. The lantern, the fish,
the old crow.
Spear.
The hawk-headed god.
It's really good for a veggie lasagna, is it?
The flute with hooves. A crow alighting upon a fist. The crying eye.
Crow alighting on a fist with fan. Crow alighting on a fist, no fan.
Just crow.
And yeah, with my oven, we just put it on the same setting every time, regardless what's been cooked in there, basically. I think we just sort of settled on...
General cook.
General cook, please.
A general cook-in, please. But that's what an arga is, isn't it? Which posh people have in their Cotswolds second homes.
Well, those you can't even change the temperature, can you? It's just
no,
on.
That's just cook. Cook.
Yeah.
Yeah, or of your house, I think. Isn't that how it works?
It cooks your whole
constantly
house.
Constantly cooks your house and whatever you put anywhere near it.
Yeah. But the way the hobs work on those is its centrality to the middle of the hob is hotter.
So I know that because of watching those Marco Pierre White videos where he says, play the stove like a piano.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not how you
do it. And he's like, ah! And then quickly cuts to him.
So you can fry an egg
huge
anywhere
bandages
on the ground
hands.
Floor, basically, if you have one of those ovens.
What's that?
If you can fry an egg anywhere on the ground floor with one of those ovens. So,
yes.
But yeah, if you're... Yeah.
What you can't do is not fry an egg. On the ground floor, that's the problem.
No, in the guest bedroom, possibly you could do a cheese souffle, I reckon.
Yeah. Meringue on the first floor, and then a gentle, slightly gooey scramble on the second floor.
Eggnog on the roof.
Eggnog on the roof. That's how it works, isn't it?
What's the final one?
Extreme sports.
Whoa, dude!
Hey, man!
You were totally getting some air just then.
Hang toes.
Nice roasty doasty. 15 out of 10, man. Roasting. I love the way you backflip that spoon doon. Spoon doon to you, baby. Yeah, I know what you do. No.
Yeah. You know what we're talking about.
Yeah. That's right. We talked about kitchen gadgets.
Gadget.
Oh, you poached it double time, baby.
Yeah, we're talking height, or on the sand or something instead of the usual environment.
Yes, we talked about extreme sports.
Whoa! Ooh, gnarl bags.
Pigabunga.
Pagaboondoon.
Yeah. That feels very sort of 90s to me, all that kind of stuff. But is that still how people speak in the world of extreme sports? You'd assume so.
I don't think I hear them speak anymore. It's all just visual now, isn't it? They jump off the thing. I don't hear them speak before they jump off a mountain or...
But it was in the public consciousness, definitely in the 90s, that people would say cowabunga and gnarly.
Yeah, definitely,
stuff.
Yeah.
I seem to remember watching on like MTV or... I'm picturing a kind of oldie, slightly oversaturated TV, and I'm watching comps of people doing snowboarding for some reason.
Mm. Yeah.
Compilations of like, yeah.
Yeah, I think I just think of like the robbers in Point Break, really. I think of, that people like that who look surfy but also have access to sort of small light aircraft like for some reason.
Great film.
Great film.
So we talked a bit about extreme sports. Here's some more, potentially, from that recording.
You know what? Far be it from me to distract from this story to a similar one which has an element of overlap, but it's to do with me, but in a way is about a less important issue. But I also spilt something on some shorts recently.
Okay. Take it away, Henry.
So I think it's really true that...
people spill things on shorts.
Yeah, and trousers. I just think the lap, it just does attract a lot of staining.
Mm.
And it's a sort of a bit of a nightmare.
Mm.
Do you find this, Ben? Just like spilling food and stuff, sauce, onto your trousers.
I could show you my groin. And it is writ large upon to my groin at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah.
Go on then. I mean, if you want.
Have you got a kind of sort of nutritional diary on your...
Oh, God. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, something's happened there.
Awful. Yeah, please put it away. Thank you.
Okay, so what I'm seeing there, I'm seeing Weetabix, I'm seeing moussaka, I'm seeing a fish shawarma.
A fish shawarma? Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
I think it's mainly toothpaste, actually, which is weird because I don't brush my teeth sitting down. And as we've discussed before, you don't have a lap when you're standing up. But don't know how that's happening.
I have a kind of Sherlock Holmes-like ability with trouser staining.
Yeah.
So I can tell for that, for example, that you've only recently discovered chipotle sauce. Why is it? Maybe it's because you don't really like Mexican food unless it's a big burrito with pulled pork. Am I right? Thank you.
Murder solved.
Yeah. It's you that killed the Duke with the big pulled pork burrito.
You've got me banged to rights. So what did you spill on your shorts?
So I recently bought some shorts.
Mm. Your first mistake.
It was probably that was a mistake, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like shorts.
Mm-hmm.
I bought some shorts this summer from Carhartt.
Oh.
Quite a nice shop.
Okay.
American workwear brand.
Okay. I thought that's for like carpenters and plumbers and stuff.
And hipsterish knobheads. Okay. Yeah. So I quite liked them. Now, I'm very sensitive when I buy new clothes around, are they, basically, I once bought some dreadful powder blue trousers when I was at university. I walked into a party wearing the dreadful powder blue trousers, and I got absolutely rinsed by everyone. I went home, and I never wore those powder blue trousers again.
What kind of trouser are we talking? A loose chino?
It was a flat front chino.
Tight silk? Flat front chino? Okay.
It wasn't tight silk. It was a flat front. It was so powder blue. Just had a really violent reaction from people. Anyway, so since then I've had quite anxious about new clothes. Anyway, so I wore these shorts. And I wore them on holiday. And I heard someone say that middle-aged men shouldn't wear shorts over a certain length.
Yes.
Is that true? Because I had no idea. I didn't even know what that meant. And I didn't even know if I'd misheard them.
Were they below the knee?
No, actually. yes, I think. Yeah, I think they were. Is that
a sort of kind of somewhere between a sort of board short and a new metal short that we're talking?
Yeah, like being, yeah, were you looking like the bassist in a ska band from the 2000s?
The thing is, I don't understand the cultural language around short length. That's what I'm going to say. I don't speak this language. I didn't know about these things. Go on.
It's a tricky thing for the middle-aged man, because the middle-aged man will fear and should fear going too short.
Exactly. I feel like I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't, mate.
I think in general,
what am I supposed to do? Up, down, what the... Yeah.
I think in general, people wear shorts, myself included, actually, that are a bit too long, because they feel like it's more decorous to have a bit more fabric, but it ends up looking bad because your proportions are all off. You actually want them above, certainly above your knee.
Mm.
Okay.
But then a lot of people actually don't, I mean, I certainly don't have the legs to pull that off. So then you get a bit worried again and wear longer shorts, but they actually look worse.
Mm.
It is a I real
mindset. You want to aim for sort of mid-thigh when standing erect.
Don't put it that way, Mike.
Okay, when you're standing up.
Mid-upper leg when standing erect.
Mid-thigh. But you do need to test the sit-down position to make sure that when you are sat down, nothing's a-peeping like a Mr. Patagonia.
Well, that's your code, isn't it, with your wife, Mike? She says, Mr. Yeah. Patagonia is arrived, and you know it's time to...
And just full disclosure,
Mr. Patagonia is casing the joint.
Yeah. And full disclosure, when we were talking about Mike's best friend, who's a small mouse called Mr. Patagonia, that's what he refers to his penis as. We were talking about Mike's penis. Okay, so in terms of my legs, what we're dealing with, yeah. I have got what have been described as
the perfect legs.
Perfect legs. If you're Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, I've got Michelle Pfeiffer's legs. I mean, literally,
yeah.
She tried to sue me. Mm. I mean, I've got...
You do have a nice set of pins.
I've got long...
Michelle
Pfeiffer-esque.
Yeah, if sort of covered in a sort of adhesive and rolled around a barbershop floor kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I've got sexy 80s, the 80s perception of what sexy legs were on a woman, legs. So that film, The Secretary, which had sexy legs on the front, that was me. A lot of the 80s films that just had sexy legs in high heels was me.
You've done a lot of Bond opening titles.
I've done a lot of Bond opening titles. I played Sue Lawley's legs from 1997 to 2004 in all her television appearances. Also, quite often, I'd be the sexy legs on the front on the front of a sort of 1980s like madcap police comedy.
Yeah, you did a lot of Morecambe and Wise dancing girl stuff.
There'd be spread legs on the front in high heels with a skirt, and then just in between frame the two protagonists going like a cop with a gun, and you know it might be Eddie Murphy or Bruce Willis.
Any 80s Italian film. Yes.
Or any 80s Italian film. Mm.
You did Nuns on the Run, I think.
I did Nuns on the Run, did Nuns on the Run 2. I did El Padrino del Milano, which is a five-film erotic, picaresque journey.
And you're currently doing Victoria's Secret Spanx Range, I think, aren't you?
That's right.
Yeah.
So what happens, because the hair, weirdly, my legs have come back into fashion because the hair and the mottled areas and the pastiness is so easy to fix in post now.
Yeah. Yeah, they've just got a mange setting, haven't they? It's one button.
Demange.
AI can demange it in like 3 seconds, which is a shame because obviously you're used to it. Employ 3 or 4 people to demanging. So I had no idea. Yeah, my assumption was the short is the one you're trying to avoid as a middle-aged man. So I thought the longer the more modest it is, and therefore the better. But actually, it puts you into it's almost skateboarder territory. It turns out I hadn't realised that. But literally, I overheard someone. It was my brother saying men over a certain age shouldn't wear long shorts. Mm. And I think he was saying it to me, because of my attention.
So you weren't paying attention to him, but you happened to overhear him at the same time. So you weren't listening to him, but you were also being nosy.
Exactly. That's the thing. So sometimes I'll eavesdrop on my own conversation. That's how dispersed my attention is. I'll overhear something someone was saying to me. Anyway.
Okay. Well, it is a tough one. And yes, just out there, just do the sit-down test, or if you can't do the sit-down test, just get someone to have a look underneath with one of those special mirrors on a stick. They look for... car bombs with.
And if even then you can't see Mr. Patagonia, then actually the worry is Mr. Patagonia okay? you might want to check out Mr. Patagonia.
Hang on, Mr. Patagonia's holding the mirror.
And that's when you evacuate the shop.
Okay, now, here's the big reveal. I'm wearing those shorts.
Wow. Coup de podcast, anyone?
It's a coup de podcast. It's a coup de podcast. But can I say the other thing which happened, right? So this all happened to me on holiday. So I was on holiday with my brothers.
Yep.
I'm not going to say which one of my brothers it was that I overheard saying this to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I then went back to I retreated to my room in a panic. And I was like, are my shorts too long?
Mm.
I looked in the mirror. I decided they probably are too long. And then I opened up a new area of debate, which is, can you turn up shorts?
Ooh.
Yeah, good.
Any thoughts on that?
Never tried it.
I don't think you
can. You're not taking a needle and thread to this, are you? You're meaning the outer turn up that is visible to the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not needle and thread stuff. I'm talking, because trousers get turned up.
Mm.
And the further east you live in London, the further up the trousers get turned up, to the point where sometimes there's more turn up than there is trouser.
That's interesting. The other alternative is from the other end, like the skirt trick, isn't it? Rolling the waistline. To bring it up a little,
but it's pulling it up, and then
but it is going to, unlike a skirt, it will catch eventually on something.
Well, Mr. Patagonia,
as a natural end point.
Yeah, but also then get so high up that then you really want to be wearing a series of petticoats underneath.
Yes, exactly. Which might be the answer.
Which could be the answer.
Maybe it should be the middle.
So when I turn around,
should wear a sort of modesty petticoat. Just yes. You know.
So that when I turn round, there's a kind of swish, a bit like someone a sort of Viennese. A Viennese waltz and a kind of a show of kind of soft doily-like fabrics that flutter.
Yeah.
So can you show us the shorts?
Well, I'll show you the shorts.
Here we go.
I don't know how to...
Oh. Hello. Yes, they arrive at the knee, don't they?
I think they're just...
I think they're kind of just the right length, probably.
Yes. I think I'm seeing three different types of tiramisu.
That's right. Yeah. So, full fat, semi-skimmed, and meat.
Oh, I can tell you. So, Henry, right now, for those just listening, is turning up at the bottom. No, what you've done there is you've pork-pied your shorts.
Or you like a pork-pie hat?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, you see, that's a problem.
Yeah, you've made your legs look like 90s Britpop thugs.
God, they do a bit. So anyway, so this is a problem, right? I've bought these new shorts. They're my shorts of the summer.
Yeah.
I've discovered that they're too long. I've tried to turn them up. It hasn't really worked. I'm not sure if it looks good or what the hell's going on.
I think it's time to deploy Taylor.
Well, no. Can I say, basically another solution arrived.
Yeah.
And from a surprising source... And that source spelled S-A-U-C-E.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because right. I went to a Vietnamese restaurant for lunch.
Mm-hmm. Outlandish.
It's not outlandish, is it? Well, I suppose it is for you.
Yeah. That's like a 70th kind of birthday kind of thing. That's a sort of decade-based birthday or anniversary.
Yeah.
In these parts.
That's like... That's
they don't
like
even open restaurants at lunchtime in the southwest.
Yeah.
Be absurd.
Well, it's slaughtering. It's the slaughtering hour, isn't it? You slaughter in the day and you serve by night.
Exactly.
Yeah. Popped out for lunch in a little Vietnamese place. I was sat outside on the benches eating my very, very nice, I think it was pulled pork and rice dish with one of those lovely complex Vietnamese dressings. Delicious. And no, sorry, on the side I had so sometimes I feel the energy going. I'm an anecdote. I'm telling you what I ate on the side. No, but on the side I did have a
currently
small...
this is your pickled egg in the Albert Hall.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you wish you could deploy the lasers. So I had some vegetable dumplings on the side, which had a lovely little dipping marinade, sort of soy fish sauce, one of those thick, unctuous, lovely sauces. And I was dipping it in, and I was wearing these shorts, and
Which are now, forgivingly so, brown, I should say.
They are forgivingly brown, but I was aware, I'm someone who's ultra aware of dripping onto thighs because I'm always dripping stuff on my thighs. Mm. And I put two napkins, one on each thigh, which is a little trick of mine.
So you've got you've made a sort of a napkin chaps.
I've made napkin chaps.
A chapkins.
I've made myself a chapkins. But it's so blimmin' hard. It will, sauce will find a way. It's not understood if is it chemistry, is it physics, but sauce and sort of trouser fabric.
Yeah.
They have an absolutely irrefutable pull towards each other, don't they? Yeah. Such a strong attraction. And essentially, it was quite a windy day, so these napkins kept on flying off, flying off my thighs. So they'd fly off my thighs, and I'd scurry up the road, grab them, scurry back onto my bench, and then press them in again. And I was holding my legs, up against the underside of it was kind of trestle table thing outside to try and keep them wedged on.
And this is a business lunch, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, they're all business lunches when you're self-employed. Okay. Are you both checking your phones? Just
I actually am.
What for? And stuff to do with the anecdote or just general news?
I'm just trying to write my own Sudoku.
My short film's just been turned down by a film festival.
Oh which one? Sorry. Maybe if you'd paid more attention to narrative structure in anecdotes that people could serve up to you for free once a week, you could actually learn something. sorry about that. Anyway, I dripped a big dollop of this dipping sauce onto my right thigh on these shorts, these new shorts that were very important to me, but they had a complex emotional history because of what happened on holiday with the various comments and me worrying about their length. Anyway, I was so pissed off because I was like, I've put a lot of thought into not getting my shorts stained during this lunch. I've put a lot of energy into it. It's a problem that I'm very much aware of. A lot of people aren't conversant in it. I understand that it's a problem. It's one of the things that Newton just couldn't understand. Why does sauce get onto trousers? It just does. Mm-hmm. So I built up these barriers. I was running around. And then I go home and I've got a big stain on my shorts because some of the bloody sauce went onto my shorts. You know, that kind of irony of like, what am I supposed to do then? What's the bloody point? You try and not get your shorts stained and they still get stained. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Not try and stop your shorts getting stained? Then what? They won't get stained, probably.
You need one of those kind of big rubber skirts that people wear when they get in a kayak. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, there we go.
Up to the neck rubber anus.
Yeah. My head can attach to the rim of your table and the rim of the surrounding tables.
And then just stick that kayak onto a skate plank.
Yeah, the kayak itself is optional, but yeah, if you're more comfortable in it, go for it. Yeah.
Stick the kayak onto a skateboard. I can actually skate home.
Yeah, I think that's what Ben's saying. Yeah.
Using the oars. And actually, in East London, I'd probably go down as actually a fairly conservative outfit. What are you, some sort of Tory MP? Kayaking around with your anus, with your rubber anus, rough. So,
surely that's the end of the anecdote. Surely.
No, that's the setup. I'm really sorry. But just quick. So basically, I got home. My shorts have this stain on. These are important shorts to me. So I go, right, I'm going to get some Vanish on them. Have you ever used that?
Yeah. Other brands are available, but yeah.
So I rub the Vanish on, stick it in the washing machine, comes out. The stain hasn't moved at all. I go and buy some other Vanish that's different type. There's the one that's like little bits of powder. I get that one rather than the liquid and I scrape it on. I wash it at a higher temperature. I have found the impenetrable, an utterly impenetrable stain I've managed to get onto my shorts, despite having an anti-getting your shorts stained mentality and approach to my day. I've got an indelible, permanent stain! Look at it! Look at that stubborn little fuck! Can you see him? Immovable! utterly immovable. I've thrown everything that modern science has at it.
A very unfortunate zone as well.
It's such an unfortunate zone.
But why is there also a sort of white stain next to your immovable stain?
Have you bleached?
You've opened up chapter two of the anecdote.
Oh, God.
Congratulations.
We've moved into the short bleaching zone, is that right? You've now still got the stain, but you've also bleached the surrounding area, thus giving extra contrast to the stain.
Yes, exactly.
It really pops.
So this is the danger which happens when you're dealing with a stain, which is how do you remove the stain and not other stuff that you want to keep, like the dye and the fabric?
You're just going to have to get a patch.
Well, that might be the next step.
Guns N' Roses patch, sew it on, join the Scouts, get a canoeing patch.
No, you had me at Guns N' Roses patch. It's Guns N' Roses patch.
Yeah, buy a little, Appetite for Destruction.
Make a feature of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or an LAPD badge. Quite cool. So eventually I did the thing which always happens, which is I then got to the end of my tether, I over-bleached it. I then went mad with the Vanish. Mm. I poured loads and loads on. I left it sitting there for like an hour when it's supposed to be 5 minutes. And I thought, I'm going to take this stain down if I had to take down the entire right leg of these shorts with it. Do you know what I mean? It became my Ahab. It became my white whale. Mm. I'm happy to see the world burn.
Yeah.
As long as this stain burns with it.
And so you're in the stage of Pyrrhic laundry.
Exactly. Cool. In fact, I've set my washing machine to Pyrrhic. and I did the classic thing, which is so completely bleached the entire area with an unpleasant sort of white and slightly sulphurous looking stain.
Mm-hmm. Here they are again.
While the original stain itself is completely unchanged.
Yes.
So you've all I've done is
a blanched area around it.
Yeah. Yeah. All I've done is collateral damage. That's all I've done. Now, so you might think
that that anecdote's over.
You might think that that's a sad story. But here's the twist. Because I had such a complicated relationship with those shorts, right? I didn't know if they were the right length, what I should do with them. I felt very self-conscious in them. Since they've developed this quite an unpleasant sort of like archipelago of different stains now on the right leg, they have now become my at-home shorts. And what that means is I wear them all the time. And they're really comfortable because they're like a high-quality make. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely love these shorts. And through sort of ruining these shorts have become my favourite shorts.
Okay.
And what does that tell us about life?
And that's the question that you walk away, that you walk out of the cinema with. Well, watch Henry's Shorts coming out next year.
Thank you for listening to Extra Beans. Thank you for supporting the Patreon.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you next time.
Cheerio.
Goodbye.
Hang ten, dude. Snoop Dubens.